Hey everyone, welcome in to another daily editorial here on the KE Report. We are getting an update from Libero. Copper and gold traded on the TSX Venture Exchange under the symbol LBC and on the OTCQB under the symbol LBCMF. We are chatting with the CEO, Ian Harris. We are going to be focusing again on this Makoa property in Colombia. Again, the company has a few other projects focused on copper assets, a couple in the Golden Triangle, as well as another project, the Esperanza project in Argentina. But this Makoa project in Colombia really is turning into the company's flagship project, as the company recently came out with one of the best copper holes we have seen in a couple years, or at least, let's say, in the top 10. We chatted with Ian about that hole back at the tail end of April, because the announcement April 26th, this first hole grading 0.89% copper equivalent over 557 meters. That, I think, showed that, look, there's a lot of growth at this Makoa project, and the company already has a fairly large resource, about 4.6 billion pounds of copper and a little over 500 million pounds of moly at 0.45% copper equivalent. Let's talk about, again, just that drill hole. Ian, I know you've done a little bit of research. Just how good was that drill hole, that first one at the Makoa project?
Always a pleasure to be here. Thanks, guys, for having me on. Yeah, it's obviously very exciting times around here because this first drill hole, we were trying to do so much with it and really making sure that everything kicks off really well for this project, right? And we obviously learned a lot. So let's just start with what you were alluding to from the very beginning. First of all, I'm so impressed and so proud of the team that I'm working with at Libero. They're absolutely amazing from the top all the way through the bottom, because our very first hole, we took it and we're hoping to be able to get to 1,000 meters. And we're really, really nervous that on our very first hole, the ability to even drill that deep, right? But we ended up taking the hole because it continued in mineralization and took it as far as the drill could go. It ended still with mineralization and ended up being 1,235 meters on the very first hole. And of that, you know, because you lose the very first 7 meters of the hole because it's soils and loose. But in total, that went to assay and went to lab, the entire hole, right, 1,229 meters ended up with a grade of a 0.58% copper equivalent. Now, I want to put that in perspective in a couple ways. First of all, our resource is at a 0.45. And one of the things that we believed was because some significant distances between drill holes that you're not really, it's not a proper representation of the deposit potential. And there's a real opportunity to upgrade in terms of grade. But the second one is, if you're looking at copper deposits around the world and you're trying to say, well, some are early, some are late, some are, what is the overall size potential that a project can have? And when I'm talking size potential, you're talking really how much copper can it contain, right? And one of the ways we look at this is just looking at the copper component and putting them on and comparing projects side by side in terms of copper percent. That means a 1,000-foot hole at 0.5% copper is a 500. A 500-foot hole at 2% is 1,000, right? And ranking all those projects, right? And so we looked at all the best holes of all the best projects in the world. Actually, it was done by RFC Imbrian for 2021, ranking the best. So all the drill holes for all the year of Filo, or all the holes for all the year, the season for NGX, what was their best hole? If we compare this hole at Makoa, which was 1,229 meters at a 0.42 copper only, just looking at the copper component, that is 516 points. If that hole was drilled in 2021, it would have been the seventh best hole in the world. And that is comparing to all the projects, all the drilling that they did that year. And it's our first hole. You know, to put it in comparison, right? Six is Arrow. Four is NGX. Three is Warinza Solaris. Two is Filo de Sol. So we're already in that bracket in terms of the proving, and this hole clearly demonstrating that the potential of this project puts it in that best of class in terms of quality of the potential of size and scale in terms of copper. It's huge. And the second piece was we wanted to demonstrate that ability to upgrade, the potential to upgrade the resource. And now we're talking about this blank zone where you have significant distance between holes and basically the grade is dropping between those holes the way that the resource is developed. And it came back very happy to see 180 meters in that zone. So from 484 meters to 664 meters, 180 meters at a 1% equivalent copper. So that tells us that obviously this deposit has the potential to actually have even better grade than we anticipated as we start to infill and expand it. So we're getting all this knowledge. The last is overall, this is the deepest hole ever put into this deposit, which gives us so much more information, modern information, to understand it geologically, right? Because there's really interesting things going on. I don't want to jump ahead and start pretending that I'm a geologist. At the end of the day, I'm just a mining engineer. But it helps. After 10 years, there's a lot of advancements in terms of obviously doing the proper survey, doing your alteration, doing advanced geochem, much more detail on some of the vectoring that you can create, and really understanding this overall deposit. So it kind of was a big checkbox for us. And I'm sorry if I'm going to get long-winded, but I'm probably going to hopefully be answering additional questions because this is our starting point. Our starting point is to say, okay, this thing has showing that it could be a big potential. It's open in all directions. We know it's going to expand, but how much potential does it have to continue to expand? Because the way we're looking today, you know, one of the advantages that we had, one of the interesting things that happened is that Solaris's Warintza project put out just a couple of weeks ago, their announcement on their updated resource, right? And they used a 0.3 cutoff and they used a 0.6 cutoff for their conceptual starter print. They also used $3.50 copper and they used $15 moly. All of our numbers are actually based on a $3 copper and a $10 moly. But if we use their pricing and we use their cutoffs on the existing resource at a 0.3, it's almost identical grade. Ours is 0.5, theirs is 0.52. If you lose it and look at the 0.6 conceptual pit, theirs is a 0.79, ours is a 0.77. We're obviously excited because it's almost identical and we're seeing this ability that there's a potential to upgrade the deposit. So we're already starting from the exact same starting point. The significant difference is that with indicated and inferred resource combined, they're about 1.5 billion tons. At that same cutoff, we're a little over a half a billion tons. So we know that as we continue to expand this resource, there's a significant ability to create value for our shareholders, demonstrating the quality of this project that we really think that we have. Because Warintza Solaris is worth $1.5 billion. We're worth maybe $50 million. So obviously there's a huge opportunity to create significant value advancing this project. So with that, it's about the announcement that we had on Tuesday, May 3rd. With the interpretation from the geophysics and the geochemistry, which is clearly, I think, demonstrating that this project is only in its beginning and that there is a huge amount of opportunity to expand the existing resource and to find additional resources very close to the deposit.
Well, Ian, very well stated. And I think that when you just look at even some of the smaller intercepts in that hole, out of the hole, 1,200 plus meters. There were some parts like the 840 meters at 0.72% copper, the 557 meters at 0.89%, almost 0.9% copper. And as you alluded to, the 180 meters of 1% copper. I mean, any of those, if that's all you had released was just that portion, those would have been a real zinger of a hole. But to have gone down 1,235 meters, this is one of the best drill holes. If it was released last year, it was one of the best drill holes on the planet. So my question to you is, before we move on to some of the new work that is being spawned from this result, do you think you properly got the value you should have got for this drill hole? Because when you talk about Solaris, when you talk about Filo, they really just kept shooting higher on their discovery holes. And this is in the same ballpark as those holes. Do you think the market is really awake to just how significant this hole was, not just for the company, but for copper explorers all over the planet?
You know, a mining engineer has a perspective over 20, 30 years, right? You know, it takes a long time to advance a project. And then once you're in operation, they normally last for a long time. So I try not to overreact on the short term. I do believe that this drill hole will get the proper valuation with time. Maybe it isn't today. because, you know, it's, there's so many influences. What's happening in Ukraine? What's happening in Bitcoin? What's happening all over the place obviously has a day-to-day effect, right? But I do think that the gravity will be pulled eventually to where it's going, to where it should be long, right? And then the other one is that I now have an amazing job because I'm working from a position of confidence. I know that if we can get a project that has some similar, you know, optics and attention, right, of a Solaris, right? You know, that's a huge increase in valuation. I'm working off an existing resource. I'm working off the back of an spectacular drill hole. I'm working off the back of this most recent geophysics and geochemistry work saying that we're still got plenty of room to go. So the next following steps are just executing on applied process. It's really taking the geological risk, a significant amount of the geological risk out of the equation, right? Which is normally the number one risk for juniors of actually getting the valuation.
So Ian, let's start talking about that news that came out just yesterday, May 3rd. The company has identified 9 new porphyry targets. These are really right around the current deposit area. These targets were defined through an airborne magnetic and radiometric survey from late last year, 2021. And these targets, 9 of them, they range from being pretty much right beside the deposit to the furthest ones are about 3 kilometers away from the Makoa deposit. What are you guys going to do with these 9 porphyry targets? That's a lot of targets to have to work through. How is that going to guide your future exploration?
So the first part of the story is this is on the 4 major titles that we have within the project. It's about 8,000 hectares. On top of this, right, we put in the applications, you know, like staking the ground. Right? And the total trajectory of the Jurassic porphyry belt to the northeast and to the southwest of the project, 100,000 hectares. Again, this is just the beginning of the story. This is the Jurassic porphyry belt. The same Jurassic porphyry belt in Ecuador that has Fruta del Norte, Mirador, Mirador Norte, Pananza, San Carlos, and Warintza. To the north of there in Ecuador, it still hasn't been explored. And this Jurassic porphyry belt continues to extend into Colombia. Okay, so it's an extremely prolific belt. This is just the first little bit of it. We're going to be able to apply what we're learning on, you know, in terms of geophysics response, geochemistry response, getting all those ratios of trace minerals, understanding now that we're having coring. We're now understanding and we're going to be able to learn the footprint of these projects, and we're going to be even be able to apply this on a much larger area. So the first thing for us is taking this information and understanding that where do we go? Obviously, the project is open in all directions, and we can continue to do step outs to continue to work and understand where is the expansion of this project, right? But as we start taking further step outs from the project, we have these additional targets that are right next to the deposit. So that's probably going to be the biggest influence, right? If you see that circle number 1, it's directly south of our current area. And it's just as we start working those step outs, we'll be able to work from there because those are in the same access that we have to the project. It's easy to move. It's easy to mobilize. And as we continuously add new and more drills, we'll be also be able to start testing some of these additional projects. Because, again, we have it's a multiple prong approach, right? You're working on infilling an expansion and then starting working at more significant expansion and then the ability to test new targets. So there's going to be a lot of work on this project. We're starting from very solid footing, and it's obviously very, 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 very exciting that the real potential of this project and that we're really only the start, and it's already for me, you know, it's a 30% of a Warintza, and that's our starting point.
Well, Ian, as you start moving to the southwest towards that target 1, it could end up being an extension of the known deposit if you get down there and you hit as expected. But you still have 8 other potential porphyry center targets that you're going after. Are there any of the other ones, 2 through 9, that you think may get a priority in the upcoming drilling or that you're most excited about?
I'm personally excited about number 5 because of its overall size and scale, and we have some historical geochemistry work on top of it that is also adding a lot of additional information because obviously there's still some work to do. We're going to be going in with a gridded soil sampling grid, but anything that moves us toward area where we have a natural access and being able to get into very quickly and support with a quick geochemistry campaign that's ongoing, I really like it because it's got the overall size and scale, right? Again, the world, if we look at the different graphs, the overall supply demand gap that's expected. You know, just talk to some people, it's 4 million tons of copper, or it's 8 million tons of copper by 2030. That's 8 years away. The 10 largest copper mines in the world produce 5 million tons. So obviously the world is needing projects, not only a great copper discoveries, et cetera, but are really big, right? We need them. We desperately need them. So that ability to add significant tonnage is obviously very compelling for me personally. But I'll tell you the truth. The person who's going to determine it is Matt Wunder, who is our vice president of exploration. He is an absolute, he's the one who's helped with this interpretation, has been driving these programs since he started in March. He's an amazing intrusive expert, which obviously includes porphyry, and really knows how to set up a systematic approach to do a geological, a regional approach that you execute on the ground. So he will be working with the team on exactly how this evolves and how these priorities come out and how we're going to execute on the ground.
So Ian, when you are looking at these 9 targets, and I understand the ones closest to the deposit, those should get priority because, yeah, as Shad said, maybe they do even connect to the current deposit. But let's face it, the deposit is already 4.6 billion pounds of copper. Are you going to be looking for some more near surface, higher grade deposits that could even further improve the economics? What do you think would move the needle in terms of any of these targets actually catching more attention from investors?
You know, if I had a wish list, the coolest part right now is that there's ability to execute on every single one of those wish lists as a potential. In terms of total pounds, we obviously have the room there. I mean, if you look even at some of the, all of them have showed this hydrothermal demagnetization, which is an indicator of an alteration that's coming in when you have mineralizing fluids coming into a system. And it's about, I don't know, 6, 7, 8 times bigger than the current deposit area. It's significantly bigger. We've proven with the first drill hole there's a huge potential to upgrade, move the grade up, right? But there's also some subtle things in this same first drill hole. The first is that there's mineralization in the lithocap, including moly, especially moly. So moly hasn't been mobilized, and that there's a significant amount of moly mineralization inside the lithocap. Second, all the historical drilling has been done off of a ridgeline. This means normally we don't really understand the geometry of the same lithocap. So there's definitely the opportunity to find material that is very, very, that where mineralization, it is starting from surface, but finding higher grades towards the surface. Third is that in the interpretation from the historical drilling and from this drill hole is indicating that the right now the high grade core of the deposit is plunging somewhat to the northeast. Now, if you look at number target 1, which is our south, which is where it's showing one of these significant targets to the south, guess what? That high grade core should be closer to surface, potentially. Right. So that's obviously very exciting for us because we have the potential to grade could improve, material near surface could improve, and overall size and scale can improve. And then the other big one that requires on a deposit is you want dissemination. You want everything to be ore. Well, we have 1,200 meters that is obviously higher than ore grade, which means that the majority of this deposit has a high potential of becoming ore. So we really have kind of lots of stuff going the right direction.
Well, Ian, just really briefly, you had mentioned that in addition to the copper, you found the molybdenum in there. And I don't think we give the moly side of the story enough credit. I know we mentioned it a couple interviews back, but just really briefly for people that may be tuning into this project for the first time, just, you know, cover how significant the moly resources you have at Makoa are in addition to the copper, which is first and foremost.
You know, when I did that same comparison between Makoa and Solaris's Warintza, you know, I like Warintza because I obviously worked in Ecuador for 6 years. You know, the Mirador project got it into construction and became the first large-scale mining operation in the history of Ecuador. Really set the path for Warintza to I think, be where it is today, right? But it's in the exact same Jurassic porphyry belt. but it's also a famous copper moly porphyry, which is considered to have very high moly grades. When we can compare the two resources, Makoa is twice as high, which is really interesting geologically, especially when you add it to this point that it really doesn't remobilize, which is maybe indicating that there's been multiple pulses of mineralization that has continuously upgraded the moly content, which also bodes really well in terms of size and scale. The resource today already contains 500 million pounds of moly. World moly production is 600 million pounds. It is by far one of the largest untapped moly resources in the world, right? And obviously we understand that moly is so important in high temperature steels and certain alloys. So as the world becomes more and more advanced, the dependence on electric vehicles and high technology, I think that's why we're really seeing a significant squeeze on moly. The other side is that most people don't know is that the majority of moly comes from copper projects where price goes up and they turn on the moly circuit. The reason for deciding whether or not to turn on the moly circuit isn't based necessarily on just the moly price, but how much copper you lose to recover it, because they're very marginal grades in terms of moly. So as some of these bigger projects in the world continue to lower and lower and lower and lower their cutoff, means it's more and more and more copper that they lose when they start producing their moly. And so that's a little bit of the squeeze that's going on in moly. So we're really excited that we have a significant leverage on the moly side, because we see both a supply issue and a demand issue.
One final quick question. I understand there's still some surface work to do on all of these targets, and the drill will be moving slightly towards that target one. Do you need to go through any permitting when these targets are ready to drill?
So when you have your mining title in Colombia, you submit your overall work plans and your overall environmental plans, and they must check certain boxes. So that has been done on this project for a long time. You only need additional permits for certain activities, like if you have to chop down trees, or you need a water well, or some other different specific aspects. Okay, that means that with a high probability, because we're using modular drills, we don't need to do any cutting down additional trees. We've actually been collecting rainwater specifically for our drills and recycling completely. So we have a high probability we can execute on that without needing additional permits, right? It doesn't mean we're not going to seek additional permits if it's required, right? But for most aspects, no. Additional permits are not required for, especially in the area one, an area that we know very well. We know it. It's an area that we're already currently walking through to access our current exploration areas.
Okay. Thank you for this update here, Ian. We're going to wrap it up here. I will be posting a link to that most recent news release. We're also going to post one of the maps. There were 9 maps in total from that news release that highlight where these new targets are. I will be posting the analytical signal magnetics map that does a really good job, again, of just highlighting where these different targets are. If anybody has any follow-up questions regarding any of these targets or the work that's going to be undertaken here out of Libero Copper and Gold, please email us either fleck@kereport.com or shad@kereport.com, and we will get those answered for you. In full disclosure, Shad and I are shareholders of Libero Copper and Gold. Ian, keep us up to date on future news. We appreciate the update today.
Will do. Love being here.